So our next speaker is Tamás Kis, who is the leader of the Quantum Information and Complex Systems Group in the Wigner Research Center. I forgot this. So Tamás did his PhD at the Utrecht University under the supervision of Jozef Jansky. Already as a PhD student, he spent a year in Berlin in the group of Harry Paul, and also visited for 3 months Ulm, where Wolfgang was the group leader. And after finishing his PhD, he went to Scotland and did a postdoc at the University of St. Andrews. And after returning, he started working at our institute, and he's working currently there. So.
Okay, thank you. Can you hear me? Okay. Hope so. Okay, so it's quite late in the afternoon. So I try to be as interesting as possible. And first of all, I will remember a little bit to Eugen Wigner, because it's a Wigner remembrance symposium. So I took this paper from 60, which is called The Unreasonable Effectiveness of Mathematics in the Natural Sciences. I think it's a very good title. So we all may wonder why is it so. And probably nobody knows the answer. I think Eugen Wigner himself was thinking about it without knowing any kind of perfect answer. But but still, he wrote this paper, and I will read some part of it, because anyway, it's not visible, I think, from the audience. So he has a quote from Bertrand Russell about how beautiful mathematics is. I don't read it. I just mentioned that it is very beautiful and excellent and so on in mathematics as surely as in poetry. So mathematics is at least as beautiful as poetry. Okay, and then there comes a story about two friends who were classmates in high school, talking about their jobs. One of them became a statistician and was working on population trends. He showed a reprint to his former classmate. The reprint started as usual with the Gaussian distribution, and the statistician explained to his former classmate the meaning of the symbols for the actual population, for the average population, and so on. His classmate was a bit incredulous and was not quite sure whether the statistician was pulling his leg. "How can you know that?" was his query. "And what is this symbol here?" "Oh," said the statistician, "this is pi." "What is that?" "The ratio of the circumference of the circle to its diameter." "Well, now you are pushing your joke too far," said the classmate. "Surely the population has nothing to do with the circumference of the circle." Okay, and then the paper goes on. About the complex numbers. I will not read these four paragraphs, but the author points out that the complex numbers were a purely mathematical construction, constructed because of consistency and beauty and making the theory perfect. Nevertheless, it comes up as a natural thing, the natural tool to describe a nature through quantum mechanics. So Wigner says, surely to the unpreoccupied mind, complex numbers are far from natural or simple, and they cannot be suggested by physical observation. Furthermore, the use of complex numbers is in this case not a calculational trick of applied mathematics, but comes close to being a necessity in the formulation of the laws of quantum mechanics. Yeah, so that was Wigner. And at the end of the talk, I will quote another small part from this, from the same paper. What I would like to show in this short talk is related to our work. And there is a tiny bit of mathematics related to complex numbers. which was discovered and developed without any reference to any physical systems or physics. And as quantum information, quantum mechanics, and especially quantum information came about, somehow it's more or less naturally arises, as I will show this to you. So what is this? This is nothing else than a complex function, which is then iterated. So you take a value and you apply the same function again, and then the same function again, and so on. This is iteration. And the iteration of complex functions was 150 years ago suggested first by Ernst Schröder, but developed around the same time when quantum mechanics was developed, but absolutely independently of anything physics. And the famous people were Pierre Fatou, Gaston Julia, Samuel Latte. They were mostly French, because there was a kind of competition among them who can develop and understand better these strange, very strange iterations indeed. So this is Schröder, this is Fatou, Julia. He was fighting in World War I, so there he lost his nose. And then Samuel Lattes. And then in the 70s, when there were computers, you could visualize and work out even more interesting properties of these functions and their relation to some special sets by Benoit Mandelbrot and the famous Mandelbrot set. And there is a very good book, if somebody is interested in this topic, by Milner, who is a famous mathematician. It's a very readable mathematics book. Okay. Now, in quantum mechanics, we have these complex numbers, as we know, but usually the time evolution is linear in a closed system, and many open system models are also linear, so quantum channels are completely positive maps. They describe linear evolution. And when we have these linear maps, then we apply standard non-relativistic quantum mechanics. We allow for Ancilla systems, which we don't use in the evolution, but we might do something with them. We might have an interaction with the main system, and there might be some measurements. And then naturally, if we want to talk about properties of some prepared and measured systems, then we talk about ensembles, so many equally prepared systems. However, there is one small possibility which came about when quantum information was developed. And this is that we can take an ancilla from the same ensemble, apply some measurement, and post-selection on almost all except one of the systems. And in this way, we go out to a larger Hilbert space. But after the measurement, we come back to the small Hilbert space again. And if we do this procedure and also select according to the measurement result, we can have a nonlinearity. And in this way, deterministic pure state to pure state transformations may occur, which lead to complex deterministic chaos for the quantum state itself. So the motivation for this from quantum information was that if you have bipartite systems like this A system, like a pair of qubits, they can be entangled, as we have heard today in some, for example, in the previous talk. And then we can have more copies in the same quantum state, which are not so perfect. So maybe they are pure state, but not fully entangled, or maybe they are not even pure state, but some noisy state. And what we can do, so one member of the pair is in one laboratory, and then there is a distant laboratory, which has the other member of the pair. And they would like to have some more entangled states, but they can have only local quantum operations, measurements, and classical communication. And by this way, they cannot increase the entanglement overall. But what they can do is either concentration, distillation of entanglement, is that the overall entanglement remains the same after some operation, but in some of the systems, the entanglement increases, and maybe in some of the pairs, the entanglement decreases. Okay, and this is called entanglement distillation or entanglement concentration. And if you want to have even more entanglement out of this, then you can repeat this procedure, so iterate the thing. And now this, if you want to have a very entangled state, of course it's good if it converges to some highly entangled state, this procedure. But sometimes it doesn't converge, and it was hard to understand, and therefore we developed a theory not for two qubits, so pairs, but for a single qubit in order to better understand it. And so if you do such an operation on two qubits, like an entangling operation and the measurement, then what comes about is the squaring. Can I go back? Yes. So this operation, if we select a zero result and keep the other qubit, is a squaring of the coefficients of the quantum state. So it's clearly a nonlinear operation. And so the trick which we use is to use a different parameterization. So instead of the alpha and the beta, we can use one single complex parameter, which is basically the surface of the Bloch sphere. Or if we write it in this notation, then this is the stereographic projection of the Bloch sphere on the complex plane. And so this is one complex parameter. And so squaring means that we square this function. And so the iteration means that we have this very simple squaring function, and everything which is smaller than one on the complex plane converges to zero, and larger than one converges to infinity. And these initial points, which converge somewhere, they are called the Fatou set. While there is the unit circle, which does not converge anywhere, initial states from there, but they jump like crazy around the unit circle. And these are in some sense chaotic. This is called the Julia set. We can show the same on the Bloch sphere, then these regions are the two hemispheres. And I skipped this part because I don't have so much time, even though it's interesting. I mentioned that we can engineer and design these protocols so we can have a smaller circle. And this is a somewhat useful protocol which we developed. So if you have a reference state, then the states within a circle, an epsilon circle, converge to this reference state. Others converge to the orthogonal state quickly. So in this way, we can decide whether some unknown state is close to the reference state or not. And this was done in an experiment. No, not this one, the previous one, but it's a similar one. Okay. What we could show is that you can generalize this, and practically you can have a one-to-one correspondence to quadratic rational maps, iterated quadratic rational complex functions, and the unitary which we apply. And so the beautiful mathematical theory, which is described in Milnor's book and was developed by these mathematicians, is in one-to-one correspondence to our physical system. It's not completely one-to-one because there are more unitaries which lead to the same function, and there are equivalence classes of the functions, but these are minor details. So basically, it's a one-to-one correspondence. And so iterations of these nonlinear dynamics leads to very complex, very rich behavior. So this is a single qubit initial state space, and the blue are the Julia sets, which are might be fractals, and the white ones belong to the Fatou set. And this is a CNOT gate plus a single qubit gate, which has two parameters, theta and phi, two angles. And if we change a little bit the angle of the single qubit operation, it is like a very small quantum computer, which is iterated. Then we have a very rich and somewhat unexpected behavior. That was an interesting question about it. Whether we can have this complete, full chaotic dynamics, which is named after the third mathematician, Laffer. These are the Latte maps, which means that all initial states are chaotic. And they have this special property that if you have a point and a finite environment around this point, like a little disk, and you take all the initial states from here, then you can find a finite number of iterations after which this small disk covers the whole block sphere without exception. So a finite number of steps leads you everywhere. So in some sense, this is an ergodic behavior in the physical sense or in this phase space sense. And we could find the single qubit operation, which can be added to the C-node and leads to this so-called Latte map. Now there comes the interesting question, for which I don't have too much time, so I will finish soon, whether noise destroys this property or not. And we had many headaches about this, and I don't know the final answer. So let's take this first example, the Latte map. Well, here all mixed initial states converge to the completely mixed state. So it's not so interesting. Everything is destroyed. But still, if we have only a slightly mixed state, we can, this is the numerical result, we can have a finite environment which after like 9 steps covers the whole sphere. We don't know whether without exception or not, because numerically you cannot decide it. But as far as numerical precision goes, this still has this ergodic property. This was realized, well, not the whole thing, but 2 steps in an optical experiment. And what about the fractals? And here the main result is on one example. So it's not a general statement, but one example is that we have a very nice fractal on the sphere, and we have a noisy initial state. And as we add noise to the initial state, the fractal does not disappear, and its fractal dimension remains the same. So noise does not destroy this fractal up to a point, and at this point it disappears. And this is not only a numerical, it's half numerical, half analytic, because we can connect this point to an unstable fixed point in the among the mixed state. This we can generalize to higher order functions for which you need more qubits, and very similar behavior occurs. So this constant fractal dimension remains there. If you add the errors to the procedure itself, then the situation is much more complicated. And here the fractal dimension very, very quickly decreases and disappears. So the noise level is 98% here. I mean, the 2% is the noise, the 98% purity. So it's very quickly destroys the whole thing. I skip this part. And so let me end on a more cheerful note. The miracle of the appropriateness of the language of mathematics for the formulation of the laws of physics is a wonderful gift, which we neither understand nor deserve. We should be grateful for it and hope that it will remain valid in future research and that it will extend for better or for worse to our pleasure, even though perhaps also or to our bafflement to wide branches of learning. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much, Tamás. Questions? Are there any questions?
You can ask about the skip.
Yes, but only one person can ask because we are so much over time.
Can you please explain the experiment?
Please?
The experiment. Experiment. Oh. Can you explain the experiment?
Okay, so this is a very, very simple optical quantum computer, as you can see. It's down converted photons, and then we manipulate both their rays, so the the pass information and the polarization. And we have a CNOT gate here and here, which is a probabilistic realization of the CNOT gate. And we need a single qubit gate in addition, a well-prepared single qubit gate. And then we have to measure one of the outputs after all these transformations. And all this is measured in coincidence. So these are the coincidences for the probabilistic gate. And then in the end, we measure the polarization basically. So here the polarization is translated to path and then back. So this is the main idea of this scheme. And And with this, we can have two steps because this is like, two steps.
Thank you.
And very good agreement with the field.
Thank you. Let's move on.